thank you for that question. So for those not here this morning, in the context, we're speaking about why the church is such a precious place and why as families and as parents, we should bring our children into the context of the church. And one of the reasons I gave was because in the context of the gathering of God's people in the local church, we have reason to have confidence that God assembles in a special way when his people gather in his name. This can seem contradictory because you know, I'm sure, that God is omnipresent. That is, God is everywhere at the same time. Where shall I go, David says, Psalm 139. If I go up into heaven, he's there. Wherever I go, God is there. So how can God be in this place more than another place? I don't know. There are things about this that are mysterious because we're talking about God. But the fact is, the Bible does mention the fact that there is those places where he manifests himself in a special way. And so he did that under the old covenant. He did that. He said, I set my name in this place, this city called Jerusalem. I want my people to travel to Jerusalem. There in the temple, eventually tabernacle, then temple, God said, this is where I'll be. In a special way, the God who is everywhere manifests his presence in the Holy of Holies. So that's the clear example we see in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, which is what our focus was this morning on this point, Jesus gave a promise in Matthew chapter 18. And the context of that promise is not the coffee shop, which is why I said what I did this morning and why we have this question. It's not when just two or three Christians get together and God is there in their presence. God is there in their presence, but not in this special way. He's everywhere. But when his people gather together in his name as a local church, Matthew chapter 18 is speaking about the gathering of the local church, specifically actually about church discipline. So it's the church gathering to an act of care and concern over a brother or a professed sister who has not repented of their sin. It's the local church in action. That's where that promise is given. Matthew 18, verse 20. And so that to me is the Bible answer that there is a difference. Unless the local church is gathering in the name of Christ in a coffee shop, that's an option. Otherwise, we are thinking about the local assembly of God's people in the name of Christ. Whoever asked the question, I hope that answered. If it didn't answer, I'm happy to have a follow-up question probably. Unless the pastor has more to say.
No, I'll go with that.
You'll go with that.
Okay. read 1 Corinthians if you want and look for the phrase, when you are all gathered.
Yep.
And that might help you. Okay, would you please share your thoughts from your own personal experience on state school versus Christian school versus distance education, pros, cons, or anything helpful?
I'm happy to talk to that person privately.
A year.
Have you got a year? And I think it would be valuable, whoever you are, to make sure my wife is with me when we answer you. Because parenting, as I just said, involves both. And the schooling thing requires judgment of a male and a female. A husband and a wife together to make judgments on those things. I started this morning and I was kind of talking about homeschooling, but I wanted to make it clear I wasn't standing up to say that homeschooling is the only way. I don't believe I can say that. It depends. It depends on God's providence. It depends on what you have available. When we moved to Ipswich, before that, we had our children in a Christian school. Before that, as I said, we had them in a government school. But we got to a point as parents where we were convinced we wanted a godly worldview for our children's education that was consistent with what we were giving at home in other areas of life. And so we got to the point, God was leading us, we need to find a Christian school. Then when we left Brisbane and went Ipswich, it's like, where's that option? And so in God's providence, the state school, in our estimation, wasn't an option for us at that time. The Christian school wasn't an option for us at that time. And we found out that there was a Christian school that did distance education. So our children were schooled at home, though we did have a connection with the Christian school. So it depends. It depends on the mum's capability and experience, if she's going to do much of the work. It depends on how much the father is going to be involved in this. There's lots of depends. So I think it's a case-by-case basis. I don't know your local area. I don't know what your options are. You need wisdom. You need discernment. You need direction from the Lord. And you need to speak to other people who've got experience in this stuff. The book of Proverbs is very clear about the wisdom and the safety of seeking counsel. I don't think we're very good at doing that as Australian Christians. We're not. I would suggest you need to talk to the older generation.
It used to be better in those days.
Yeah. But for help of getting counsel, to help discern God's will for your situation.
What about socialising of children who do distance education?
Yeah. Well, if you've got 10 kids, no problem.
We only just missed that.
Okay, I get it. I understand the question. And the socialising thing is something to think about. But let me just say, I think often that's a point of fear that parents have who haven't seen it go well. My own take on it is there is socialization that happens when children are at home, school, that they're forced to interact with their siblings and grow relationship with their siblings. They're actually socializing with their siblings in a way that they don't when they go to a day school. I'm not saying that one makes it better than the other, but I'm just saying that there is socialization that goes on. I thank God, God bless our children from being educated at home through distance. They still had a church to go to. They still had Christian relatives to interact with. There's still socialization going. And in our case, our children now, adults, some of you know some of them, they're all good friends. Particularly my daughters, they're best of friends. And I think they're friends with us. They're certainly close friends with my wife. But some of this has got to do with the fact that we did actually live out the socialisation issue in that context.
Is TV watching wrong? And then is it okay for children to watch Christian movies?
Wow. TV watching can be wrong if you're watching what you shouldn't be watching. God is the one who sets the standard. We can be enslaved and lack discipline and self-control with anything, and that could be TV watching. TV watching can be an idol. I think as parents, we need great wisdom in judgment and assessment and discernment if we are allowing our children to watch television as to what that is. I mean, I don't know what all that looks like now with children. Our children hardly watched any television from my memory.
Little House on the Prairie.
Okay, right. So we had a TV, we had a DVD player. I don't know if anybody knows what a DVD player is. And we had those things called DVDs. Actually, we had VHSs. But we selected. We're very selective. A lot of my poor son, one son, three daughters, a lot of girly type of movies, just because of the wholesomeness of what that type of program was. Not much television, but that was for us. That was years ago. I don't know what all the kid programs are today, I, it makes me go cold to think of what it could be like, but you've got to make that judgment. Christian movies, okay, we've got to define what a Christian movie is if we're going to answer that question. What's a Christian movie? What makes it Christian? We, as a husband and wife now, watch Christian movies. And I go looking for the gospel. Is that what makes it a Christian movie? Well, most presentations of the gospel in a Christian movie is incredibly weak. So what is making it a Christian movie? Does it have no swearing? Does it have no things like that? Well, obviously that's what we would like. I can't answer that question for you. You have to answer that before God.
From the morning sermon in Psalm 87, would you say your local church is more important than one's own family?
I think that quantifies, sort of categorizes this morning's sermon in the wrong way. That's not what I was meaning to say. It's not that one's more important. They are two different God-given institutions. They are both important, but they must be held in their right place. They're not in competition with one another, but can be used in harmony. I think that's the issue that some Christians get confused over. There is an issue of affection that God expresses in that psalm. And so my point, hopefully you got the point that I communicated this morning, that often is not thought about is how the local church has a part to play in parenting. And that God has a deep love. And often Christians, here's the reason I said some of those things, that often Christians that have been given a fresh insight and understanding a great burden for the family, they see what's wrong and they don't want to do what's wrong. And so that it's like, I don't want to do that. And they can get so focused on the family that it loses the biblical balance. And so what I was trying to raise from several perspectives this morning and urge you is to hold the biblical balances in tension. Because sometimes that's what you've got to do. It's not saying this is more important than the other, but both are stated and we must hold them in their tension and in the place that God has given for us. And if we only do one, we'll be lopsided. And we will suffer. And so it's being discerning as to what God has given and use them in as the gifts that they are from God.
Still on the same topic, but a slightly different flavour. If God has a greater degree of love for the church than Christian families, does this mean church is more important or a higher priority than the family? What does this look like?
I think I said it this morning. I don't want to promote my own preaching, but perhaps if you went back, if the recording's available, and listened to what I said, I think I gave some issues of practical application of what it does look like. And that is to make use, as I just said before, of all the means that God in His grace has made available for us as Christians and as Christian families. They are the things that He has given that relate to salvation and sanctification. They are His gifts to us. And so it's not necessarily a matter of choosing of what's more important, but there does come times when you do have to make a decision because of a calendar of events. So I think I gave a few quick passing things. What's more important in the eyes of God for a family to go to a birthday party or on the Lord's Day come to worship where Christ is? I have a very clear answer to that. God wants you to go to where He is and to worship with His people, and you may have to politely, graciously decline the invitation to the birthday party. A lot of children will have friends who will put a birthday party on the Lord's Day. And you've got to wrestle with that one yourself, but think as a As a parent given the authority, you want to instill in your children a priority for God's kingdom. It's in those moments that you are actually doing that or not doing that. So there does at times come a point of making a choice, but it's just the outworking of these principles. It's not saying that that's more important than this in terms of your family and the local church. It's understanding what God wants of you. That's kind of what the answer is.
Well, let me push the same principle one more time with one more question. How does a family balance time together with a busy church life?
Yeah, okay, that's a very good question. You kind of need to answer that question. I'm thinking of this from a pastor's point of view, and every church will come into this slightly differently. So I don't want to say something that crosses you, brother, but churches do need to be sensitive about this balance. And, I mean, I grew up normal, sort of general Baptist background, and sort of almost every night of the week, I think my dad was out, committed church member. When we started our church, it's like, he was faithful, and that was what church was like back then, but that's not healthy. That doesn't help us have this balance. And so the church does need to be careful that it doesn't overload the program, and it's sort of working against itself of having healthy church. You want dad to be at home, leading family worship. Not at the men's meeting one week, and then at the, you know, the evangelism this next day, and then so on and so forth. You want the church to be together, and so there needs to be a sensitivity about these things. I don't know. You need to say more on that question.
So I'd say two things. Once again, there are things and times that God has already marked out as His, those times are His, and you dedicate them to Him straight away. And do not even think about there is some kind of trade-off between one and the other, purely because that is a family time and it is a church family time. God actually blesses your family there. Mm. The big take-home message I got from this morning was very much in our life. If we were just left on our own to bring up our children, we would have been hopeless parents and the kids would have been even more hopeless than they are. But the reality is, it was the church and the church families that actually made up for our inadequacies, and it was the church families that taught us so many things that helped us to be even like as hopeless as we were. So we would have been even more hopeless without the church, is my point. And so this idea that you put one against the other is actually misunderstanding what your goals for your kids are first. And let me, whoever asked this question, let me help you by turning the question around again for you. So it says something like this. How does a family balance time together and a busy church life? I'd ask this question. How does a busy family life fit together with a church life? Notice when the word busy came in the question, it was next to the church life, it was not next to the personal life. And this is sometimes we find our stress. It's the family life is so busy. And it's all the commitments that we consider so essential. They really are not essential. They are actually a distraction sometimes, and I'd have to go as far as to say a pain in the neck. But that's my opinion.
I guess I did give an illustration this morning that sort of touches on this, and that is, I think the question sets up a competition that doesn't need to be. The way that we always looked at it, and I believe this is the wisest way to work it out, is that you do stuff as a family, and that includes church. The church is not against the family, or church is not different with the family, but you go as a family to church. And I gave an illustration about my childhood memory about cleaning the church. Remember that? And I was encouraging you to do things that are related to the life of the church as a family. So if you have a roster to clean the church, that you get the kids involved, if that's permissible to the deacons. You know, like you do stuff as family that relates to church. And then you're not split up. You're constantly together as a family. So it's sweet. It's working together.
Better question. Not better. Another question. Sorry. But another question, meaning moving off the topic. What can I do to be a better auntie and uncle with children who are aged between 1 and 8?
Wow. You can offer to the parents to let them have a coffee break. I think uncles and aunties have a tremendous role to play in as Christians, if they're in that context of a Christian family. And if we're talking Christian, to grow in their understanding of what family life is, if they've got that, if they haven't, to grow in that. Clearly to be a supporter, so they can't obviously raise the children in a normal situation, but they can be tremendous supporters, tremendous helpers. They can pray, and 1 to 8, that's the busy stage, right? Especially if you've got half a dozen in that period of time. That's the stressful stage. That's like mum's, she's running all the time. And so there would be practical things that uncles and aunties could offer to do to help relieve the pressure that's intensified because of the hands-on needs that relate to little children. What that looks like, if you've got a heart to serve and your eyes are open and you've got a love for those family members, you'll see the needs. And if you can't see the needs, ask the parents.
What do you think is the purpose or the goal of a youth group?
That's a difficult question for me to ask. We've never had a youth group in our church. So that would depend on how the church understands what the youth group is. You'd have to answer that question.
Okay. Oh. when it comes to a youth group, I don't see it as like a separate church or this separate group that are basically gathering together to learn things that are not being taught in church life. So really a youth group is something that allows, if you like, young peers to get together with adults, and basically it should actually reinforce and it should more encourage the young people to actually ask amongst their peers questions they sometimes don't ask or they don't think of, particularly as they're growing older and wondering whether they should be considering the gospel as something they would believe or not. It's just another, if you like, place where the gospel is taught. So I think a couple of weeks ago we talked about Christians or Christian parents in church, and I remarked at how many people I know of that actually became Christians at youth camps, or how many Christians have become, how many people have become Christians through finding out something through a peer. And that I've even known of our kids sometimes that said to me, if only you taught these things. And the problem was I was always teaching them the things. And it was just that they were not ready to hear. And it was only that they seemed to be ready to hear when they were with their peers. And they made their decisions without me. And that's even more exciting for me. That would be my comment, but if anyone else wants to rebuttal that, I can also see youth groups being a problem, by the way, if that's what you're suggesting. They can easily become a separate law to themselves, in which case that would be a problem. Okay. Why does the Bible always use son in referring to obeying your parents and not daughter? I think that's for you.
I'm just trying to work out where it says son all the time.
Proverbs.
Obviously, the book of Proverbs. Proverbs has been set up as counsel, not all of it, but much of it. So especially the early part, like we were looking at before, of the counsel of a father to his son, of Solomon, for instance, to a David. to instruct him and to train him and to teach him in the ways of the Lord. But like the passage in Ephesians is, children, obey your parents in the Lord. So it's not just sons. But often then, just in other way, I guess, to answer it, often in the Bible, there is that way of expression in terms of gender that speaks about blessed is the man, but that doesn't always necessarily mean it's not the woman. We've got to be careful when we read the Bible and we're reading it and thinking about it with the way that we use language now and the gender thing, and you know, like all of the, well, that doesn't seem fair. Why is it always about men and not women? Well, we're bringing our 21st century culture and imposing it into what the Bible is saying. We've got to make sure we're getting out of the Bible what God put in. And that sometimes that's one of the issues when it comes to these type of questions.
Okay, the last question. The Bible gives a reward for those who obey their parents. It says your days shall be long and well. But what do the kids think that my days are going to be long whether I obey or not?
What does the... I didn't get the question.
So the Bible promises a reward to kids who obey their parents.
Yes.
The promise is your days will be long if you obey your parents. But what if kids think my days are going to be long whether I obey or not?
What if they think?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to help them to understand what God thinks. You've got to explain what that promise is, what that promise means. I didn't. I didn't have time. And it's not as simple as meaning you're going to live to be 105. It's got something broader in it than that. And God's not necessarily always going to quantify exactly what it looks like. This is his promise of blessing and a blessed life. In the Old Testament, to live as long as you can in the promised land, that's the kind of way you thought. Okay, so, but we've got other things to think about as New Covenant believers. So, but in answer to the question, you've got to help the children understand what God is actually promising in a promise like that. What they think or not is kind of irrelevant. But what does God say? That's what you need to communicate. Because what God said is what is, and that's what's going to be.
I think the promise, one thing I would make about the promise is, the promise is that you may live long in the land. And the general feeling is that it's an individual promise to an individual child, if an individual child obeys. I don't believe that is the actual meaning of that verse. It's actually in the plural, and it's saying something like this. Just as Israel was promised that they will live long in the land if they obey God, so the church is promised, and Ephesians is writing to the church is promised that the church will continue on if obedient children grow up to obey the gospel. So I think it's a gospel promise. And so the reason your parents are teaching you to obey them is because they'll get you into the habit so that you will obey the gospel. And if you obey the gospel, then the church will be in the land long.
I think